Are you guys ready? Would the clerk please call the next case?
Court will now call Teodora Perez versus Dina Renee Johnson. And may it please the court, Mr. Jim Zeta to argue for the appellant, Ms. Michelle Robinson to argue for the appellant.
May it please court.
Good morning. I think the best place to start with this is to give a little color. Because why am I up here on a sore neck, sore back car accident case? And I think the court needs to kind of understand how we got here. Mr. Medoff was previous counsel for plaintiffs in this case. He was trying the case in front of Judge Wallace in the 96th Court. In the court record and the third volume, page 43 and 44, you see his frustration with Mr. Medoff. He says things at the end of the trial, like you're not prepared, this case is not being properly tried, you need to get new counsel. He said you may try this case again, but it won't be anytime soon and it won't be in this court. And he said I'd be happy to transfer the case. He was clearly frustrated with Mr. Medoff. At that point, Mr. Medoff, who's in his 80s, he came to my office, and I'd had a case with him where I was on the other side, and he asked me to step in the case. Now, I was unaware of any of this other than that the case had been mistried because of mention of insurance. That's all I was told. So I got the case. We organized it. We did all the work that we needed to do, and when we were organizing it, we noticed that after the case had been mistried, that the defendant had filed a motion for summary judgment, a no-evidence motion for summary judgment. Went ahead and looked at the file and put the file together and saw this is easy. This no evidence motion for summary judgment, having done hundreds of these on both sides of the docket, this one's easy. We've got the plaintiff and the defendant both in saying that it was the defendant's fault. We have a police report showing that it was the defendant's fault. We have a physician who's come in and will testify and give us an affidavit saying that the injuries from the accident were approximately caused by the accident. We have a second doctor who has a report through workers' comp, which I'll get to into a second, who says that it's a compensable injury as a result of the incident. We've got the causation, we've got damages, we've got $3,000 in medical expenses that we can prove up, we've got pain and suffering. It's very simple. This is a no evidence motion for summary judgment. We file our response. I believe that if there's a problem with the evidence in this particular case, that they would file an objection, that I would find out that there was something that was missing in this file that I wasn't aware of. There was no objection that was filed to any of it.
Do you have to file an objection to raise an argument that expert evidence is conclusory?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe the cases say that. And I don't know that they say it's conclusory. Their primary argument is that because the expert was struck in the mistried case, that objection gets carried over into the summary judgment. And there's no case law for that, and that's just not the rule.
Do you think that if Judge Wallace had entered a written order striking Dr. Page, that would change your analysis at all?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. I believe that when evidence is presented in a summary judgment after a case is mistried, that they have to object to it again. And part of the reason is exactly what happened to me. I had no notice at all that this had happened, the 196 objection had happened. There was no court record. There was no record at all. There was nothing in writing. I had no notice of this. And so all of a sudden, I find out way later that this has happened. If there had been an objection in this case, I would have filed a motion for continuance. The 196 objection is a gotcha objection. You haven't gone ahead and put all the information of your expert on the request for disclosure. An easy fix. Take me 5 minutes to get that fixed. But I wasn't aware of that. And so I didn't have that objection. I would have filed a continuance and would have gotten that taken care of. But I wasn't able to do that because I didn't know about it. A very simple fix.
But they do also attack it as conclusory.
And, Your Honor, I don't believe either one of them are conclusory either, to hit that question straight on. If you look at Dr. Downey, who is the workers' comp doctor who came in and evaluated him, he was on the job when he got this injury. And so the workers' comp doctor in page 139 of the reporter's record, or the clerk's record, says, I certify the employee has permanent impairment as a result of the compensable injury. And that was...
That's the conclusion. Based on what?
5 pages of... There's a whole paragraph as to the accident. There are 5 pages of testing that she did. There are the history of the patient. She has objective findings. She has subjective findings. It is as thorough a report as I could ever hope for in a small car accident case. I wouldn't pay for that in a car accident case. It's a great report. And it was not objected to. And it was part of the evidence that Judge Wallace considered. And he never entered an order saying that this was not in this case. That Dr. Downey's report, Dr. Downey's report from Court Reporter's Record 139 to 145, that report was in evidence, was not struck at the trial court, and was not objected to. So that is, and keep in mind, all I need is a scintilla of evidence. I don't have to have monumental evidence, but this report is great. On the top of that, I went and got Dr. Page's report and got him an affidavit, a very basic affidavit that you file in every no evidence case where you set out all the information, you attach the medical records to it to show the work that he did. He says what the injuries are, and he says, based on reasonable medical probability, I believe that the injuries were caused by the car accident. What else are we supposed to do? Having responded to these so many times, if that's wrong, then everybody's doing it wrong. That's the way the cases are set up.
Do you agree, counsel, that because of the time that had passed between the accident and when Mr. Perez sought out care later on, that he did need expert testimony to support causation at trial or in response to a summary judgment?
You're talking about the Guerva issue?
Yes,
Your Honor. I believe in this particular case on the Guerva issue, I think the 2 expert reports are absolutely solid and get us there, right? But I want to be honest with the court. When I look at Guerva, I think it's a coin flip. I think that looking at the cases, I have a string cite in my brief of cases which talk about neck and back, in which Guerva was gone ahead and found in my favor. Opposing counsel has a string cite in her case on Guerva of decisions that were in her favor. It's really a coin flip. As far as the issue, though, on the timing, I want to address that. And Dr. Downey addresses it. He was in workers' comp. And in workers' comp, he got some treatment, but they stopped his treatment. I could be up here for an hour talking about the problems I see with the workers' comp system, but...
You're talking about the first 2 doctors that he saw?
Yes, Your Honor.
I thought that I might be misremembering the record, but I thought that Mr. Perez didn't even really want to go see those doctors.
He saw some doctors in the beginning. He went and saw those physicians, and then the treatment was stopped because workers' comp wasn't paying for that anymore. And what Dr. Downey said in the record was that was improper, that he should have been paid for and seen additional physicians. He just didn't have the money to see the additional doctors. And so that's why in this particular, I don't believe that the timing has a major issue. If it does, it goes to Guerva. If it goes to Guerva, you can look at Dr. Downey and see what she said in her report. I think the issue of the lack of an objection, I do want to address one other issue with respect to the timing. In researching the justices, I see that some of you have served as adjunct professor before. I'm an adjunct professor over at Texas A&M myself. I teach law practice management, and we changed our case management system the day before the hearing on this motion for summary judgment. We went from server-based to cloud-based. I was very proud of it, but it was very time-consuming, and we missed the hearing in front of Judge Wallace. I got a call from the court that I should be there, and we raced up there, but the hearing had already happened. That's the reason why I filed a motion for a new trial. I wanted to get in front of Judge Wallace and ask him, did I mess up because I didn't show up for the summary judgment hearing? Is that what the problem was? But at the motion for new trial, he reassured me that that wasn't it, and he reiterated some of the things that he had stated on the record in the trial. So that, I just want the court to understand why there was a motion for new trial in this case as to coming directly up on appeal.
Going back to speaking of timing, I realize there wasn't a written order, but since Judge Wallace did strike Dr. Page for not having been disclosed when the trial started, I mean, do you disagree with defense counsel that you still have the same disclosure obligations in a summary judgment context as you do at trial, and that it was still untimely when you attached Dr. Page's affidavit in response to the summary judgment motion?
Your Honor, I do agree with their case law that says that the issue regarding disclosures does apply to no evidence motion for summary judgment. But all those cases require an objection at the summary judgment hearing in order for those to be struck on those grounds. And the purpose of that objection is to provide the plaintiff an opportunity to cure that issue. And that's what I needed in this case, was an opportunity to cure that issue if that issue was raised. The reason why I gave so much color in this case was to let the court know and understand I had no knowledge of that issue. I was a new attorney based on Judge Wallace telling him to get a new attorney to come in on the case and take it over. And that is one of the reasons of the objection, is to bring it up to the other side. And this wasn't a substantive objection. This was a simple fix. And so to get a witness struck without an objection, without an order — there's no order from Judge Wallace that he didn't consider this witness. There needs to be an order at the summary judgment context saying, I hereby strike the witness and didn't consider it. In their brief, they say the trial court acted properly in continuing to exclude any expert opinions offered by the chiropractic expert in a summary judgment affidavit presented by Perez. He didn't exclude it. He never excluded that. There's no order excluding that opinion. And there's no case law that I'm aware of in all the research that I've done that a ruling in a mistrial carries over to a summary judgment context. This case needs to go back down. It's a standard car accident case. We go ahead and mediate it, get the thing done down the road.
Yeah, I have to ask, because the damages seem to be pretty small. Have y'all tried to settle this thing?
Your Honor, we did ask for the mediation to occur in the appellate process, and the defendants declined. Having done this insurance work for as long as I've been doing the plaintiff's work for as long as I have, the tides are shifting with a couple insurance companies. Just to be frank, they are being very, very difficult on big and small cases. And they're forcing counsel like me to jump through every single hoop in a case before I get to the opportunity for them to come to the table and offer the money that needs to be offered in this particular case. There were some discussions at the trial court level after we walked out about doing that, but then those discussions went away. I think they believe that the case is so small that I wouldn't take this next step. But I feel an obligation to Mr. Perez and Mr. Medoff to go ahead and follow through on this and come to this court and ask this court for the relief that I believe is just in this particular case. This is a classic no evidence summary judgment response with good evidence that was considered, that was not struck by the court, that clearly met the more than scintilla of evidence standard. It's a simple reversal. I'll give the court back the rest of the time. Thank you.
Morning, may it please the court. I'm Michelle Robertson. I'm here representing the appellee, Dina Johnson. I'll start out by saying I disagree with Mr. Zeta's interpretation of the Guevara case and all the cases that both sides cite. I read all the cases, and I think the difference between this case and Guevara and the cases that Mr. Zeta relies on go right back to some language that's right out of the Guevara opinion. When the court said the general rule is you have to have an expert to prove medical causation. The court then talked about how you could have an exception for lay testimony in certain circumstances, but what the court said was the condition must occur temporally close in time to the accident. And they said in the opinion that lay testimony was sufficient to establish that the plaintiff's, and these are the words from the opinion, immediate post-accident condition, which resulted in him being transported to an emergency room for treatment, was causally related to the accident. But they said, for conditions and treatments that developed or occurred over the ensuing months, you had to have expert testimony to prove that up, to prove that causal link. And so The cases that he has cited, if you read them, they all talk about the immediate post-accident conditions, or there's one case that he cited where it wasn't a complicated injury. The only injury was back strain, and they were able to tie that close in time to the accident. The cases that we're relying on, the Kelly and Witherspoon versus Superbike versus Simpson, and a couple of other cases I located that I'd like to cite to the court, the onset of the symptoms was delayed, the seeking of the treatment was delayed, and you're several months out from the accident. You're not talking about the immediate post-accident conditions. And so, what we have here is, we don't have that immediate post-accident treatment here.
What about Dr. Downey's, the way counsel characterized Dr. Downey's opinion that Mr. Perez could or should have continued treatment but for the fact that workers' comp quit paying for it?
I disagree that's the what she said in her opinion. I don't think, and I also disagree that she gave an independent medical opinion based on reasonable medical probability that all of his conditions were approximately caused by the accident. The workers' compensation doctors, they filled out, if you look at the medical records, these are forms that they have to fill out where they literally go through and check boxes. I don't believe that this is the kind of expert testimony that courts rely on to raise a fact issue on proximate cause of these injuries. So I disagree that Dr. Downey's report is sufficient. I think that, and I mean, the other issue, I guess, is that Mr. Perez didn't seek any immediate treatment, and he didn't even seek Dr. Downey's opinion for 5 months. He didn't disagree with what the doctors who saw him in November and December of 2014 said, and didn't do anything about it until April of 2015. And then even though Dr. Downey said that he was entitled to some treatment, he didn't even try to go get that treatment for 7 more months. He didn't see Dr. Page until November of 2015, which is a year later. And that's why I feel like this is a case where they needed the expert testimony. I don't agree that Dr. Downey's testimony is sufficient. I have, I can't deny that she said that he had a 5% physical impairment and should have been able to go get some treatment, but I don't believe, based on the cases that talk about sufficiency of expert testimony, that she had she gave a reasonable explanation of the basis for her opinions. Most of what she recites about the accident comes from him. That's not her opinions or her explanation. It was him telling her about the accident. And so I feel like that evidence wasn't sufficient to raise a fact question on proximate cause of all the conditions and all the injuries for which he seeks treatment. Another thing is that what he's seeking compensation for happened 7 months later. So he's never put on any evidence that he's trying to recover the damages, the medical expenses, or any other damages that would have resulted from Dr. Downey.
Did you raise anywhere before your motion for new trial the idea that the disclosures, that there wasn't a sufficient disclosure of an expert, or were you just going solely on the no causation evidence?
No, we did not object that there, well, I take it back. Our motion was filed right after the mistrial and did say that the discovery period had ended, they needed an expert under Guevara to prove causation, and they didn't have any admissible expert testimony. That's what the motion said.
But your motion didn't talk about what had happened at the mistrial.
It did not. And so and both of us, you know, Mr. Zeta cited some cases about objecting to an expert, but all those cases were about objecting during a trial. They weren't talking about whether you have to object in summary judgment when you've already objected and gotten a ruling on the record. You know, and so, and there, frankly, are no cases with this unique situation. So if the court decides that we needed to object again and get that ruling on the record in connection with the summary judgment proceedings, then that won't be a sufficient basis. But as the justices have pointed out, we also argue that, Dr. Page's affidavit was conclusory and that all the other medical records were insufficient to raise fact issues. And so that is just an independent basis. The court can even just set aside the whole 193.6 exclusion issue and rule that the evidence was legally insufficient to raise a fact issue because it was conclusory, the two expert pieces of evidence that he's relying on. The If you look at Dr. Page's affidavit, it is very short, and it just has three one-line causation opinions that the Supreme Court has condemned before. In the Mason case that we cited, there was a summary judgment case, and the court, the expert there said, in an affidavit, in my opinion, the breaches I've identified above were the proximate cause of the plaintiff's injuries on such and such a date. And the Supreme Court said, that is conclusory because it doesn't explain the basis for the opinions. And I feel like that is the same problem that Dr. Page has. And also Dr. Downey never really gives this independent explanation of the reasons why she seems to think that all of his conditions and injuries were proximately caused, or that she does think that they were caused by the accident. I mean, Dr. Page just says, it is my opinion to a reasonable medical probability that these charges were for medical expenses incurred as a result of the automobile accident. He doesn't explain why. His billing records are in the are in the summary judgment evidence, but they don't contain any explanations. They just say chiropractic manipulation multiple times. They don't say what condition was being treated or even what body part was being manipulated. The medical records from Dr. Page are not in the summary judgment record. So even though it says they're attached, they are not in the record. So there's nothing that the trial court could have gone to and looked at to see if there was some support for his other opinions that were one-liners, where he says, it is my opinion to a reasonable medical probability that these conditions were caused or exacerbated by the automobile accident, and that it is my opinion, based on reasonable medical probability, Mr. Perez will require future and corrective and supportive care indefinitely. I mean, those are just, those are the definition of conclusory opinions. And I don't believe, and the other issue I think that is although he listed a bunch of conditions that he said he had that he saw on an x-ray that he took in November of 2015, he doesn't explain, and to me this is critical, there's been a year between the accident and the injury. There's no idea what Mr. Perez might have had happen to him or have gone through in the intervening year. And there needed to be some explanation of it, and especially when he noted that some of the conditions are degenerative, which to me as a layperson signifies something that would be based on age or wear and tear. And he also noted that he had healed compression fractures. So does that mean he had a prior injury or car wreck or something like that that needed to be discussed?
Just as a point of clarification, in appellant's reply brief, he takes the position that there were medical records and bills attached in the response to the summary judgment motion altogether in an Exhibit D.
Mm-hmm. I went through them yesterday, Your Honor, as I was preparing. I went page by page. The medical records that are in Exhibit D are the workers' compensation physician records. I did not find any records from Dr. Page that were medical records, only the billing records. So they're not in there to provide support for his opinions. And that's another reason why we think that they are, why his opinions are conclusory. The testimony of Mr. Perez, I think, was insufficient to raise a fact issue because, again, what he proves up in his testimony is that he didn't have any immediate post-accident conditions that he could causally link up to, like an ER visit or something, and he's not seeking any compensation for any of the treatment except for Dr. Page a year later. So none of his testimony satisfies the Guevara exception because it's just too far out. It's not contemporaneous and close in time. So his testimony was also insufficient to raise a fact issue. Oh, the two cases. I found two cases in preparing for oral argument that I would like to cite to the court where the courts there held that when there was a delay in reporting the accident or in seeking treatment, that requires expert testimony. One is City of Laredo versus Garza, 293 Southwest 3rd, 625 out of El Paso. There, the plaintiff waited. He was in an on-the-job accident, but he waited a month to tell his employer that he was injured. And then he went to the doctor several times, but didn't tell the doctor that he was injured for, I think, up to 3 months. And the Court of Appeals there said, under those circumstances, when you have that kind of delay, you need expert testimony. And then Flagship Hotel Limited versus Hayward, That's a Houston 14th case, 2006, Westlaw 3316981. There was a six-month delay in seeking treatment, and there was also an issue about whether the surgery that the plaintiff ultimately had was necessary because of the accident or because he had a pre-existing condition. And that, so the court there held immediate expert testimony that a lay jury could not understand and make those decisions without the guidance of expert testimony. And that's certainly, we think what we have here, some of those conditions that Dr. Page named in there were had words that I don't know what they mean, and but by the same token, he talks about degenerative injuries as well. So I feel like he would need to explain whether this was caused by age or whether this was caused by the accident. So because we didn't have any competent expert testimony on causation, and because Mr. Perez's testimony and these workers' compensation medical records and Dr. Page's billing records were legally insufficient to raise a fact issue, we think Judge Wallace properly granted the summary judgment, and we are asking the court to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just go over the checklist of my points that I made based on the argument. Opposing counsel seemed to indicate that there was nothing in the record that he had not been afforded reasonable adequate care. I want to point the court to the court reporter's record 145, where she states, quote, Dr. Downey states Mr. Perez has not been afforded reasonable adequate care. In addition, on page 145, Dr. Downey states the opinions in this report are based upon reasonable medical probability.
Do you think that's sufficient, though, to tie it to causation based on the accident?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Page 139 of the court reporter's record gives a description of the accident, and that was one of the other points I was going to bring up. She indicated that the physician was the one putting the information down about the accident, and that wasn't sufficient, but that's in every case. The doctor's never at the accident. They always take a history, and that's what this was. They took the history, and the history that they got from Mr. Perez is identical to what he said in his deposition. So she has the history. She has 4 pages of objective testing that she did. She put hands on him. She examined him. She wrote, there are tests in there that I hadn't seen before about that she'd done, about his gait, about observing his reflexes. And she concluded, her conclusion was that he had a compensable injury as a result of the accident to a reasonable medical probability. And that was not objected to. Rule 166AF says that an objection to a form of an affidavit or an exhibit must be made or else it's waived for rights of appeal. There's no objection to that. So there is no objection to that evidence. That evidence, and that evidence wasn't under 196 either. Judge Wallace did not strike that particular evidence. I do want to talk about the medical record issue that Justice Kerr brought up. It was sloppy on our part. We put the affidavit behind the medical records instead of in front of, and so that's why Exhibit D is backwards. 198 of the clerk's record, that should have been in the front of Exhibit Z at 125D, but it's in the back, but it still is his records. And he got the workers' comp records and included that in his medical records, and he was looking at that and making his opinion as well. So he saw Dr. Downey's information. Finally, on the Guerva issue, you have the testimony, the full deposition of the plaintiff, the full deposition of the defendant. They both talk about how he indicated that he was injured at the time of the accident, that he said that his back and his neck and his elbow hurt. Then you have a history of him walking through his back and elbow and neck hurting. You have him being examined by physicians, and ultimately they determined that it was caused by the accident. It's enough, based on that, based on Guerva, it's within the common knowledge experience of lay persons that you hurt your neck and back in an injury. He didn't have any pre-existing problems, didn't exist before. It appeared at the time of the accident. And it's within the common knowledge and experience of lay persons. Those are the 4 elements in the Guerva case itself. He meets all those. But like I said, I don't think we get there. I think the experts get us there first. That's all I have. Thank you.
Counselors, we appreciate your argument. It's been helpful. Your case has been submitted. You're now free to go about your business. Thank you.
All rise.